Attention everyone, this is an emergency broadcast. The loud frequency coming from your radio is not a mistake. Do not turn off your radio, but instead turn up your radio as loud as it can go. Do this so we can broadcast this frequency as loud as possible.
And welcome everybody to another episode of Game Stuff. I'm your gaming girl, Kalai, and with me today is Roberto. What's up, Roberto?
This week, good. This week has been brought to you by hashtag BrowseEtz. Now, everywhere, all over the internets.
Matt could not make it again this week. He is very, very sorry. He actually is moving and thought it would be a good idea to move in exactly 1 week. He has 1 week to move out of his apartment. I'm pretty sure currently right now, the last time I saw him, it's just him and the Tetris theme song as he's putting boxes and stuff into boxes. Do 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 do. But he'll return next week, hopefully.
Yes, and consider it this way, he's leveling up his apartment in the RPG, so like he'll have more inventory. His stats will be boosted, his HP and mana will be fully rested, more so than he was previously.
This week's topic is we're going to delve into the whole debacle that is Telltale. But before we get into that, let's do some quick housekeeping. Please subscribe and rate us. You can find us at Twitter at GameStuffCast. We also have a Facebook page, it's GameStuff Podcast. Just search and ask for an invite and we'll invite you. And we have a Patreon page, patreon.com/provengamer. Now, let's get our party started, as we always do, with what have you been playing? Roberto, what's going on this week? You been playing anything good?
Oh, yeah. It's been difficult because of the fact that, like, I think that the last couple weeks I've gotten a lot more mobile. I haven't really been stationary. I mean, it's weird because I'm not going to any cons or anything, but I think just there's been a lot going on with certain things going on, and I'm just trying to, you know, get my ducks in a row. So that being said, I've been doing a lot of mobile gaming on, you know, my Switch, my Vita, and there's one game that we can finally talk about because it's out today. So we'll start off, though, with Cosmic Star Heroine. Have you played that?
No, but I've heard good things about that one.
Cosmic Star Heroine is a JRPG inspired by other JRPGs that takes place in a sci-fi cyberpunk future, very much so inspired by great anime such as Ghost in the Shell, Outlaw Star, sort of, maybe not Space Dandy, but more Outlaw Star, Gundam Wing, that type of, and Blade Runner. That was the other thing I was thinking of. That's not really an anime, although kind of it was with those shorts that they made last year. In it, you are a member of the API. You are an agency dedicated to helping and preserving humanity's health and future prospects in outer space. They've colonized worlds. This is a world where people can control guns with their minds, be able to hack things with their brains, use energy, all sorts of stuff. It's a cool, wonderful, exciting world. When you discover a massive conspiracy involving a really dark, terrible weapon, it's up to you to go across the cosmos and stop this terrible conspiracy before it happens. It takes place in a presentation very much so inspired by like SNES video games. The from the scrolling to the illustrations to the color, the music is phenomenal, and the combat is turn-based. And the game can kick your butt if you wanted to. It has an interchangeable difficulty.
So what type of game is this? Is this like a twin stick shooter? Is it like an action RPG?
I forgot
RPG?
To say. Oh yeah, it's a JRPG with tactical turn-based elements. Very similar to something along the lines, I'd say, of Chrono Trigger, where it's top-down. There's no isometric, there's no twin stick or anything like that. Personally, right now, I like it. It's a lot of fun. It's interesting. Once you start playing it, it's hard to put down. And it's just really, really neat. I always wanted to play it, and it finally went on sale not too long ago, and I have been tremendously enjoying what the game is and how it's doing. It did just release for the Switch not too long ago, and so I'd highly recommend
Actually, I was going to ask what system you're playing it on.
PlayStation Vita.
Okay.
It's also on PS4, Steam. I don't know if it's on Xbox One, but it's really neat. The guy that made it is based out of Taiwan. He's he's trying to make a new game now, and but this is like his like big debut. It was very much hyped on the PlayStation side of things, and it delivered. So it's great stuff. The next game is a smaller game called Super Mutant Alien Assault.
Interesting. Are you playing that on the Vita, Switch?
Vita also, but it was on PS4. It's on Steam. There was a game called Super Crate Deluxe or Super Crate something, and it's an arcade game with levels and boss fights. So in Super Mutant Alien Assault, you know, it's the typical story. Earth is doing great, and then one day aliens blow it up, but they blow it up to the point where it's useless to resist, but we escape and to another planet. And while the humans are in cryo, you are a defense robot. You have to fight all the aliens. So imagine it's a little bit like, I'd say, Joust and Contra. You're in a level, and there's aliens that bust out, and you have to shoot them, but then you have little objectives to complete, like delivering fuel to an engine, or just simply staying alive, or activating the hyperdrive, something along those lines. And this is all coupled with a really cool 1990s visual aesthetic with like the pixels and the blood and the guts, but also the dubstep, which is actually pretty badass. It's really good dubstep.
Oh, so I like dubstep. That's cool.
Yeah. It's a quick, nice little game. Nothing like tremendously special, but good if you want to like play something real quick and you don't want to get involved in a JRPG or something more intensive. The second to last game, God Eater Resurrection. I think I mentioned this last week.
Yeah, you did.
So I've been playing that a lot more. The game has cross-save capability with PS4,
Is it cross-buy?
No, regrettably no. But it's probably going to get on the cheaper end. I picked this game up when it was like $10 on a flash sale or something. And sure, it takes up a ton of space on my memory card back on the Vita, but it's really a lot of fun. It's identical to the PS3 levels of quality and graphics. And the PS4, you know, it's a higher frame rate. And the action, the monster hunting action, the sci-fi element of all is just great. So, just to put things let people know, there's a God Eater 3 happening next spring, in 2019. And this is the first brand new, made from the ground up God Eater for consoles. I don't know if it's heading for Switch, but I wouldn't be surprised if it does eventually get announced for Switch. But it's a lot of fun. It's great. It's sci-fi monster hunting. It's doing very well. And yeah, it's cool. Finally, this is a game that me and Kalai can talk about. And now, like, we basically can mention it because of the fact that it has been released today, which means that all embargo is lifted. Wander Song by Greg. And I forgot the other two other guys, but yep, Wander Song. So here we go, ladies and gentlemen. It's a cool story.
I have been so excited to talk about this game. Oh my god!
So it's September the 1st or 2nd, or it's a Saturday. I'm in PAX West. I just got done with one of my appointments, and I'm checking the phone because, you know, social media is a really good place to find clues, little things that are happening, right? Toe Jam and Earl, the Twitter channel, says, "Come to 1925." Alleyway Street for free food and drinks. And I'm like, you know what? I don't have anything planned today. Let me go and check it out. Plus, I'm starving. So then it's this nice, bright, sunny day in Seattle. I'm walking by, tons of people, lots of coffee shops, places to eat. One take it to the area in particular. There was an Alienware van there. So I finally get to the alley and finally make it to the alley, and it's a nice little lounge, and that's where I discovered Wander Song. So, we got in there. So, Wander Song, that's where I got my taste of Wander Song, and then all week long, I've been playing the game on the Switch, And I gotta tell you, this is a really, truly special video game for Nintendo Switch owners and PC owners as well. So,
which
Wander
chapter
Song,
are you up to?
I think I'm about to take on the first castle with the Overseer. Which,
okay.
Yeah, like, I think it's still, like, I'm maybe, like, a little more than ways early on. It's just, like I said, I'm hoping to binge it tonight and tomorrow and then have a proper review ready by Monday. But it's, like, I've been playing it and just enjoying it for everything it is. So, in this game, you are a lad. So, you know, think of, like, you're somebody who uses, you're a young boy, you sing, you yodel, that type of thing. And the game literally starts off with a nightmare sequence in which you pick up a sword and there's a giant monster in front of you. But, you know, you realize the sword won't do anything. So you have to use your voice. You defeat the monster. It turns out to be a kind of a sprite? I think that's the word. Or like pixie. Or not even a pixie. Any of those things. Just a interdimensional creature. A girl. With tons of colors. It's like, oh, hi, cool. I'm glad to meet you. But guess what? Your world's gonna end. I know it sucks, doesn't it? But I kind of feel bad because, you know, you look like a cool guy and a cute guy, and I would have liked to have gotten to know you and stuff. So it has that kind of humor. Lad wakes up, and now you find out the world's probably gonna end. So you must use the power of your voice to fight enemies, navigate your world, and of course, save the world. Now, the difference is, though, visually, the game is stunning. It's done in a very interesting visual style that's reminiscent of, say, children's, like, kind of, not necessarily children's cartoons, but, like, arts and crafts.
Paper. Yeah, it's paper. Yes. It's almost like Paper Mario, but with a much more subdued color tone. So it's not as bright and cheerful as like that color palette of Paper Mario. It's much subdued color, but it's beautiful for the world.
Right. It still has color. It's not like bleak or anything. So, it has a wonderful, even the scaling and the rotoscope, the kind of, the parallax scrolling is beautiful. There's like different, like nice, like degrees of blur that it uses to represent the background, the foreground. The humor and the comic humor that's in the speech bubbles is really cool too. And of course, using your voice to fight enemies and also navigate the world is fun. I need a little bit more time with it because, like I said, I got caught up with a lot of stuff, but it's a beautiful game and I highly encourage everybody with a Switch to please check this one out. And Kalai will definitely have a more thorough account of why Wander Song is a very special title to...
Yes. So I am on chapter 4.
Yeah.
I am through the game. Now, I know it's definitely on Steam. Is this coming to PlayStation?
No news confirmed at this time. I would have to say that it might. It's an independent game. I haven't really seen the word exclusively used. But I'd have to say that this was a very big highlight of the Nindie selection during the Nintendo Direct. So it's safe to say that there's a lot of cheddar riding on this one.
I'm not going to spoil anything for anybody, including you. But you get to a point where something happens and you actually switch characters and you actually play a different character. And I kid you not, my Steam trophies were popping one after another. Like, bomb, pop, 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 pop. Just for playing this character. So, when you get closer to the end, because I think I'm close to the end of the game because I can't stop playing the game. It's just so beautifully done. Now, the best way to describe the playing is this is a puzzler. So, you have a lot of puzzles that you need to solve all through your voice. There's going to be times where you have to sing to get birds to follow you, and you have to sing to grow vines so you can climb on the vines and get to your next level. The best way to describe the singing is a Simon Says game.
Right. And then for me, the comparison comes to another game called Hue, which was on the PlayStation Vita and PS4, where you had to, like, there was a circle around your character, and you had to select the right color to solve certain puzzles and things of that sort. So that's where that reminded me of. But yes.
Well, there was points in the game where They didn't give you the color.
Right, you had to use the tones and use your ears.
You can also use your visual. I can't use tone, I'm tone deaf. So, So at some point, it's a wheel. You actually bring up a wheel and each has a color, but at some point there is a ghost that dances and you have to match the tone. Match the tone, but what I could do is match, they dance towards whatever side of the wheel you're supposed to be hitting. Mm-hmm. So that's how I was able to do it. Highly recommend this game. It's a very beautifully well done, just easy game. I mean, there's been a couple of times where I've jumped off the edge. There's no lives, so you just get put back where you are, and it's back to trying to figure out the puzzle you're trying to solve.
So. Right, yeah. So it's like, it's a nice... it's more than a palate cleanser. It's just a nice, cool, relaxed start. Like, I guess you can call it maybe a Stardew Valley-inspired type title, where you play it, you have fun, you mellow out.
I do have to say, though, that... there was a lot of stress the past week in my life with everything going on in my life. And when I picked up that game, I forgot about everything in my life because I was just so memorized by the colors and the music and everything we've talked about on this podcast about, you know, how music affects the tone of the game, how coloring and graphics, it's exemplified in this game.
Right.
So I highly recommend it. It's on Steam and Switch.
Yeah, so please, if you can, please. The guy is also really cool. He was inspired by children, you know, by magic, like that was actually the theme at PAX, come to think of it, with some people. It was when I asked them what inspired them, they said, children's, the imagination you have in youth, your youthful spirits. The fact that you feel that everything, like, and it's true, like, I'm a creative guy and imaginative, but when you're an adult, you're grounded with the reality of what's going on around you, and you realize that, like, you know, there are some things in this world that are, you know, that are the reality of things that can bring you down. But when you're a kid, yeah, anything's possible. You think, like, you think, you know, you're in a time in your life where you think aliens exist, or Santa exists and things of that sort. Because Santa, well, aliens and Santa do exist, by the way. But my point being is, like, you have that really completely over-the-top level of imagination of things and thoughts and ideas. And that's where he poured into the game in the development of Wandersong. So, yeah, definitely... I'd have to say that I just need to finish it and then I'll do a whole review, but I think this is definitely going to be one of the best games of 2018.
Definitely. So the other games that I have been playing, I jumped into the hole and I just kept going and I can't get out of the hole. I'm like around the hole of Dead Cells.
Yeah. Yeah. You were pretty, wild about that one. I have to still revisit it just to get back into it because that game can get pretty addictive pretty quickly.
Yeah, so it's been a blast. I've been sitting on the couch playing the game next to my husband who's playing the game. We're taking turns using his 65-inch television just playing the game. We just couldn't stop. Mm-hmm. Let's see. I also have been playing... what else? All I can think of is Dead Cells. This is really bad. Oh, the NES. I do want to talk about this. So, Nintendo put out their Nintendo Online. Are you part of that?
Not yet. I think I'm going to wait. I don't have Splatoon 2, for example. But then the other online games, like Paladins, you can actually play without the Nintendo Online.
My friend... let me explain why you need this service.
Yeah, I know. The co-op and the NES thing. The NES games. I know. I know. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
They released 20 games.
Yeah.
Is Contra, do you have friends, among
them?
Huh?
Is Contra among them?
Contra hasn't been released yet, but Double Dragon is.
Okay. Fair shake. You were going to say? I cut you off.
For anybody that doesn't know, this service, you can actually, for $35 a year, you can have up to 8 Switches on your service. I currently have 7 of my friends on my service, so we're paying $5 a piece for the whole year.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess that's, there you go. That's something. Maybe I could do a joint something with one of my buddies up north.
There you go. So I've been playing that. I've also been testing the new controller. I use the N30 Pro, which is a company from called 8-Bit, and they do Nintendo controllers that are third-party. I've been playing around with that because the Nintendo controllers that they're offering through the service isn't very practical, in my opinion. It's $60. You get the NES controller. You can only have one per account, so I have 7 people. Only one of us can buy them. And they're only used for those Nintendo games. They're not used for anything else. So, at least with the 8-bit, I can use it for other games like Hollow Knight.
Right.
So, it's highly recommended to check that out. But that's pretty much what I've been playing. I want to move over to our topic of the show.
Because right, because we got a lot to break down about this.
Yeah, we do have a lot to break down about this. Okay, so, Telltale folded this week. And apparently, through research, it has just been a lot of stuff that has caused it. One of the main factors for them closing is they actually could not secure the last round of funding. They apparently had gotten a funding agreement with somebody who was going to fund them, which we don't know what company was supposed to fund them, but rumor is it was like Lionsgate or somebody big, and they pulled out in the end. So they had no funding and couldn't keep the studio open. On top of that, they have like terrible management apparently when I dove into this even further, which doesn't help. So, not only are they closing their doors, they have no severance packages for their employees. They then told the employees that you have 1 week left of your insurance. Mm-hmm. They laid off 250 employees. And they've already agreed to finish the Minecraft story mode, but as that's the only game that's being finished for them. So, let's start with...
Oh yeah, well, you're forgetting about the class action lawsuits.
Yes. Oh yes, thank you. The class action lawsuit that was filed today, the company did not give them 60 days warning per California state's WARN law. They must give them 60 days notice that they're closing. As part of this lawsuit, they're seeking pay for the 60 days and 401 contributions and other compensations that they would have obtained as if they were working those 60 days. So, Telltale is pretty much up Schitt's Creek's paddle without a boat at this point.
With their hands with cuts. Like, you wouldn't want, if you have cuts on your hand, you wouldn't want to put your hands in Schitt's Creek.
Because of infections. Yeah. Exactly. It's bad.
Yeah.
So, let's talk about first about their management. Apparently, this gentleman opened up the studio and created The Walking Dead. And the first Walking Dead season did so well. He didn't just plan to make a second game. He went out and secured a whole bunch of other IPs, such as Game of Thrones, Back to the Future.
Right, well, keep in mind, Back to the Future came before Walking Dead.
Oh, I'm sorry, thank you.
Yeah.
What was their first game? Their first game was a big success.
Okay, their very first game was Salmon something. It was, oh my gosh, it was the puppy and the... It was a puppy and another dog and a cat that worked with them. But the first game that before The Walking Dead was Back to the Future, and then Walking Dead happened.
Walking Dead really got them on the map.
Right, in 2011. And then in 2012, 2012, that's when they had, like, The Walking Dead Season 2. And I remember because I was in college at the time, and this is when the show was really big. My buddy, we had an open apartment in like these courts, and on Sunday nights I'd have people in my apartment, like not in my room with my bed, but in the main living room watching some episode of Walking Dead, and they'd all be glued into it, and they would give commercials for Walking Dead S2.
Yeah, so they got really big really fast, which caused a problem. So after being so successful, they went out and secured a whole bunch of IPs, which then proceeded them to turn out stuff so fast that employees were working 20-plus hours a day. They were working 20 hours.
And from what, according to one Twitter user, like, without any kind of overtime pay, overnights, the constant crunch, 11th-hour crunch. And, I mean, I was a graphic design major in school, and I can tell you that there were some moments of crunch or 11th hour something just to secure that, you know, make sure your stuff was in to secure that grade. That's not a good feeling at all. And that was just in college. So you can imagine feeling that constantly. Just to imagine that, just to make a game.
Mm-hmm. These people put their heart and soul into it, and then the owner was micromanaging because he was originally a programmer. He would change stuff at the last minute, and then they would have to crunch some more, which is not good for your IPs.
Right, and then on top of that, there was a YouTuber by the name of Clean Prince Gaming, who I'd highly recommend because he does these video essays about these subjects. I happened to watch him, and he did a video about this whole situation back in April. One of the things he mentioned was, in that crunch, in that rapid expansion, they didn't slow down enough to update their proprietary technologies. So as you know, the games were made on the Telltale tool, and this was an engine that was designed in 2006, I think, to do what the games do. But they never updated it to be optimized for today's game systems. So when they released some of these games on PS4, they were running on an engine from 2006, which, I mean, good on the mileage, I guess, you know, if you want to talk about mileage and engines, but not too good if you're trying to optimize and better the quality of your games.
Or how about this? How many problems did we have with Walking Dead? Just the Telltale series in general.
I encountered maybe one problem with Batman because I remember that Tuesday I was off. I downloaded the season finale of the first game, and I remember there was a big fight sequence in like the cafeteria of that lab, and people were completely missing. All you'd see is their teeth and their eyes, and I was like, "You gotta be kidding! This is taking me right out of this amazing moment. You gotta be kidding me here."
Mm-hmm. I had problems at the end of Batman where it was stuttering so much. And, you know, this isn't going to be good for a studio if you keep putting out product that is having problems that you've been working on for years. Like, you had to update that engine. The other thing I think that contributes to the whole thing with Telltale is repetitiveness. So if you eat the same thing every single day, you're going to get tired of that. Every Walking Dead game was almost the same. Every Telltale game was almost the same game, just with a different graphic layover or a different story. You know, when you have stuff like Life is Strange coming out to compete against you,
right? You know, and then how they get. I mean, granted, I've not played Life is Strange yet, and I know that's a cardinal sin. But but having played several of the Telltale games, I like the story, and I think that's where, like, they hook me in each and every time. But yeah, like, it was the same thing over and over again. With subtle changes, such as with Batman, you know, the fact that there was entire sequences where you were a detective, and you could literally piece together crime scenes. But other than that, you know, make a decision here, make a decision there, fix a little puzzle here. You know, there's a combat sequence, hit the quick time events, you know, and so that way, you know, the combat sequence goes through, that kind of stuff. And it was just like, it sounds like with this game, they were really, like, with the last Walking Dead season, they did try a couple things, such as there was actually, like, a combat sequence where Clem has a bow and arrow, and she can actually move around. I don't know the context of it, because I haven't even played season 3 yet. But it sounds like they were trying to do more. But yeah, like in that pursuit of more getting more IPs and just sticking to the tried and true method of things, they just decided not to, you know, innovate and try and freshen things up into more parameters. So that's one thing that I was growing a little weary of, but I like the story so much that I wasn't really too heavily bothered by that.
And this funding was so important to them. I don't know if you saw, but out of those 250 employees that they let go, some of those people had just been hired a week and a half ago.
Which, to me, that's like... I can't even... It's just traumatic to even think of that. Like, let me tell you this. I'll share something a little personal. But, okay, because I wasn't hired by a gaming industry. One of my first jobs coming out of college was right down the road. I searched for jobs for 3 months. I found a graphic design position at a place called Innerworld Highway LLC. It is a mile down the road. It was beautiful. No commute. I could walk there if I wanted to. I had my own workstation. Everything. They saw my website, my portfolio, my resume. I went then. They said, oh, okay, since you're a new hire, we're going to have a staffing agency walk you through the ropes. And, you know, I had to file out all this paperwork and all this other stuff. Right? I started work. They wanted me to build some kind of an advertisement because they sell 3D printers. And I was building it. And at the end of the second day, they're like, okay, we'll see you tomorrow. I go home. I get a call from a text message from the staffing agency. They said, can you give us a call? I was like, okay. I call them. They say, oh, how was your day? Good. I regret to inform you that you've been let go. And for 60 seconds, I swear, I thought this was a joke. And then when I asked him again, and he confirmed it, I let him have it. I let him have it, and I have no regrets about that. Because you just don't do that to somebody. I was hired, and I wasn't even paid for the 2 days. I was let go, and they never gave me a reason why. So I can't even imagine the anguish that it is, and even the depression that it is to know that you got hired by one of the greatest companies at that time, and then subsequently asked to leave. Even reportedly, according to one site, I believe The Verge, they confirmed that one of the people who was hired recently actually came from outside the country and was guaranteed a work visa. And now, because the company's out, she has only, like, that employee has, like, a couple of days to get the heck out of the country because your visa's expired. So, like, I can tell you, like, while in my case, it was a job down the road, don't condone this with violence or anything, but I wanted to light that place on fire because I just could not get that. I just can't get... How you know who you are and you're the hiring manager and you know where your position is and you decide to hire somebody and then just terminate them without any kind of reason. So, and that caused depression and stuff. Like, I was sad. I was bummed out. And I went to PA with a buddy just to kind of calm down, but I was livid, you know? In this case, I can't even imagine what it is to just, you know, go through that emotional hurdle of leaving your home behind and then being able to have the honor of working there and then being terminated in just a matter of days. And now you got to get kicked out and head back home after all that money you just spent, you know, mm-hmm. And finding a place to live. And then on top of that, one last note before we move on. San Fran is not this. Here's another detail to consider. There's a Twitter user out there. I think Emily or Erica, she's been tweeting like crazy about this whole thing. And one of the tweets she mentions is that even while they worked there, they were living check to check. So imagine being this extremely talented designer programmer with gaming. And even though you have a very, very nice career job, you're living check to check because that's how expensive it is to live in San Fran.
So it is now, very expensive to live in San Fran.
It's stupidly expensive. Like, just for context for our audience, we're in Jersey and we have some pretty high property taxes, but like $1,500 for like a one person bedroom apartment, what have you. Well, at least I saw that once. But then again, I think they were in Seaside, so Seaside's kind of that's an ocean town. But we pay quite a lot for property taxes, and like honestly, New Jersey is like a beach and then one giant road between Philadelphia and New York. There's not too much to us, so we shouldn't be paying that much, but we do. So like, but in San Fran, you're like, I kid you not, you're spending maybe $500,000 on a shanty little thing that you see like in the woods, like a little cabin. So that is, to me, that's criminal, like, on the notion of not just Telltale and maybe how they were paying their employees, but also just that city. I don't know what is the purpose of charging so much for your residents to live there and how anything gets expected to get done, but anyways, yeah.
Also, Telltale, it was reported that they were taking advantage of the newer people, the newer hires, the people right out of colleges and stuff, because these people were coming out of college and so excited to prove themselves that they were easily working 20 hours a day. Now, the reason why, which I don't think Roberto kind of talked about, this overtime, I believe most of these people are paid salary, so their overtime means nothing.
Right. And, you know, I know overtime, there's certain laws that protect that, especially in California and, like, the West Coast. It blows my mind, like, that just they would work, like, so hard and, you know, probably without any sleep and just to get an episode out, and they didn't get paid for it. And I know that that's been something that, that has been exploitative. Like, I'll share a quick story about my dad real quick. He was a security guard at one point. You know, he has a college degree and everything, but, you know, trying to just, I think it was before he graduated, and he worked an extra hour or something doing security because they needed him, and so he was in overtime. And then when he found out they didn't pay him for overtime or for that hour, he literally just walked in and said, "Here's my uniform, I'm not coming back, take care," and that was it. And it's just, some people play you for a fiddle because they think that, you know, that you, they can get away with it, they're a big company, and the truth is that you can't.
Like the Bills player, did you hear about that, the football player?
Wait, oh, that he just walked off the field halftime. Yeah, that was,
and retired.
Yeah. Oh man, I can say that you gotta kind of. I mean, some could say that's a meltdown, and oh, he should have just stayed in the season. But you know, like, I guess it's better that he got out now than later on and have a complete meltdown. You know.
I don't know.
So yeah, it's just. It really is a mess, the whole thing. I mean, I was actually reminiscing to Kalai a little bit before we started recording, but that this is something that's been happening in the industry for quite some time, and I think now, like, we're really due for a reckoning in this regard from a lot of companies and studios. Definitely in the next year, I'd have to predict. A couple of years ago, for example, I'll do some bullet points here because I can go on and on about these situations. In 2008, 2009, video games were blowing up, and now they had digital marketplaces where you could just buy games on a weekly basis on the PlayStation Store, Xbox Store, Marketplace, I should say, and the Wii Shop. And it was around this time where I started to see studios shut down. 2008, Mercenaries 2 came out from EA, and the studio shut down the next year. The last game was The Saboteur. These guys made Star Wars Battlefront 2, and so many hundreds of people scattered to the wind. In 2012, I should say, Activision, well, actually, let me go back. From 2009 to 2012, Activision went on a shutdown spree, shutting down studios left, right, up, and down. And one of the ones that was absolutely just insane was Radical Entertainment. Radical Entertainment made Prototype 2. If you're familiar with the Prototype games, open world action game, your character is a mutagenic weapon gone horribly wrong. You can eat people, you can turn your hand into a giant, you know, 100-pound claw that can shred through steel. It's a fun game. It was actually very critically praised. The sequel was actually even head over heels better than the first. And after the team reported selling 2 million copies of the game, which makes it a double platinum title that certainly is very profitable, Activision decided to completely shut the studio down. To the point where, it's still technically open, there's like 10 people there, but all they do is they sit around, and then Activision gives them, let's say, a gun from Bungie, from Destiny, or a level from Call of Duty. It's like, hey, can you just, you know, gloss over this, wax it, give it a polish? That's all they do now. They went from making like a big game to now just being like, you know, the
janitor of video games.
Right. Or like the guys that like, you know, that dry your car after a car wash, you know? Granted, those guys are awesome, like, you know, because they work hard. But it's just, you went, once again, just, it's infuriating. And the same happened to a lot of Activision studios, like Ravensoft. They made The Singularity on PS3, an amazing shooter. They also, High Moon Studios, they made the Transformers games that were amazing. And it just, where does it stop? You know, where does the layoff stop? And then even, you know, EA would do plenty of that with like games like Syndicate and a couple of their other IPs. Medal of Honor Warfighter was another one that was really not a bad game at all, but people lost their, you know, lost their jobs from that one too. And and even now, like, and then of course back to the present, you know, we have to remember that this week it wasn't just Telltale, it was Carbine Studios, Capcom Vancouver, and there was even a studio, I forgot where, it was like a mobile game developer in Seattle. They actually moved offices for employee retention, and they wound up firing like I think 70 employees.
Wow.
Yeah, I forgot what the place was, but that's somewhere there, and it's that's so that in a span of a week, almost 500 employees that have been terminated for just negligence and just really bad toxic management. And then, so I really think that we're due for a reckoning. It's like, it's, and because in the end of the day, guys, like, you know, video games are made by humans, they're made by people, and they work their asses off like everybody else does. And we should just kind of really take a moment to respect what it takes to build our favorite weapon, build our favorite level, build our favorite characters. It's not just something that you think up and you just do, and it's the easiest job in the world. Everything in this life takes work and takes hard work, and it takes a long time to achieve those results that you wish for. And video games are no different, but they are very representative of hard, strong work. And it's important just to remember that. And, you know, of course, in everything you do, foster the best environment that you can, free of political banter, any kind of ignorance or arrogance, stubbornness or anything like that. I'm sure that we're going to start to find out stories of what really happened with Telltale in regards to the director development and any kind of the disagreements that they may have had. Mainly, we're going to find out from Mr. Bruner and Mr. Pete what happened, because they were both the co-founders. Mr. Bruner was the CEO of Telltale from 2011 to 2017. He was ousted in 2017. So it's safe to say he has a lawsuit filing hearing happening on October 17th. So it's safe to say that we're going to probably find out more about what really happened with the leadership of Telltale and what we can learn from it. So there is, and as for the overall silver lining, it's good to know that the video game industry banded together. They made a lot of job offers for these guys. Granted, those offers might be rather painful because you have to probably move out of San Fran. If you got a family, you got to say goodbye to your goodbye to the community. Your kids got to say goodbye to their friends. Your wife has to say goodbye to her job, or your husband has to say goodbye to the job. And then you got to go elsewhere. Maybe California, but maybe overseas, because there's people as far away as Guerrilla Games that we're hiring. Mm-hmm. And it's like you have to think about that, that kind of sacrifice now that needs to be made, and how painful that's going to be. But the silver lining is that community got together. And as for anything else that Telltale was working on, from what I gather, Stranger Things is still going to happen, but not with Telltale, because they had just gotten the license. The Minecraft thing will probably be their last release. The Walking Dead will probably be finished, but not in the way that we're expecting. And I'm kind of hopeful they'll sell some of the IPs. But the point is, though, is that this is a human issue. And I believe that there is a space in the gaming industry for human decency and human dignity to try and make the industry better for people and gamers, too.
Well said. Mm-hmm. Okay, with that, that's a great place to close our show at. Roberto, where can they find you?
Oh, boy. Well, you can find me on Twitter, where all the Bowsette retweets are going. Because, I'm sorry, but I'm sorry, but okay, if I might like end this off on a funny and silly note, if there's any one good thing I love about the internet and where we're at, it's a lot of things. We can share things, silly things. We can share pictures of food, which has changed, the internet's changed food as we know it. But we can also share amazing artwork, and I'm sorry, but the Bowsette thing's too cool. In case you don't know, people have decided to make Bowser, who's a 30-something-year-old dragon that likes to destroy Mario, into a saucy, spicy, attractive woman character. And I'm not gonna lie, between the manga illustrations from manga artists and all sorts of arts out there, it's great. If you have a Bowsette thing, totally share that. Embrace your inner weirdness. Now, I know you're looking at me weird, Kalai. I'm not gonna lie. Some of that site, it's kind of like, it's cool. I mean, come on. It's kind of like Jessica Rabbit with Who Framed Roger Rabbit, you know? Nobody watched that for the movie. They watched that because of Jessica Rabbit. As awkward as it is to say that, but it's true.
But where can they actually find you so they can find your creepy Bowser tweets?
They're not creepy. It's art. No, I will say one was creepy. One person did the Toadette thing to an eel. But anyway, okay. Okay, let me get back on topic. Okay. Twitter handle at Jehuty88. That's Jehuty88. That is reference to Zone of the Enders, the second runner, currently available now on PS4 and PC for the lovely price of $29.99. Facebook at Roberto Rob Nieves, of course, interacting in the game stuff's Facebook page. And actually, in regard to the Bowsette thing, that was a nice little thread that was built because I posted that picture. next up, Instagram, MajorSloth, 1988. Snapchat, MajorSloth, 1988. Nintendo Switch, MajorSloth. Oh, PlayStation Network, VectorMan88. And in reference to Sega Genesis and the character VectorMan. And, of course, here every week. So, yeah, feel free to find me, and we'll get going on doing all sorts of video game stuffs.
For those that want to find Matt, he's Missed Enough on all social medias. That's MISTAHNUFF. To find me, I am on Twitter at Kali21. I am on the PlayStation Network at Miley1978. That's MAILE1978. I am on the Xbox at Miley21. And you can find me on Steam at Kali21 playing Monster Hunter if you want to come join me. But I would like to thank some of our sponsors. We are sponsored by Amazon. Just go to the Proven Gamer link. Go to provengamer.com. Click on any of the Amazon links and do your shopping like normal. It doesn't cost you a thing, and it does help out the site. Also, we are sponsored by Humble Bundle. We picked the Extra Life charity, which I'm going to put a link to our show notes to that. If you like our show, you check out Trophy Whores and the Nintendo Dual Screens. And I just want to thank the people that have helped us with this show. Isaac Sego, and of course the band Take Away the Ugly. I put their links in my show notes, so check them out. Thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you on the next episode of Game Stuff.
Have a good week, everybody. Be nice to each other. Be good to each other. Take your time to enjoy the view and have the talk and have fun and play video games. May the force be with you. Have fun.